Chapter 15. Marriage to take place as soon as he got back. It seems the girl is an heiress. You know how low the English ideals are compared with ours. And Miss Bruce Pringle said his relations were perfectly delighted at his being provided for, apostrophe as she called it. Well, when he got back he asked the girl to release him, and she and her family were furious, and so were his people. But he holds out, and won't marry her, and won't give a reason, except that he has formed an unfortunate attachment. Did you ever hear anything so peculiar? His aunt, who is quite wild about it, says it must have happened at Wentworth, because he didn't go anywhere else in America. Do you suppose it could have been the Brandt girl? But why unfortunate when everybody knows she would have jumped at him? Margaret folded the letter and looked out across the river. It was not the same river, but a mystic current shot with moonlight. The bare willows wove a leafy veil above her head, and beside her, she felt the nearness of youth and tempestuous tenderness. It had all happened just here, on this very seat by the river. It had come to her, and passed her by, and as he had not held out a hand to detain it. Well, was it not, by that very abstention, made more deeply and ineffaceably hers? She could argue thus, while less he had thought the episode, on his side, a mere transient effect of propinquity. But now that she knew it had altered the whole course of his life, now that it took on substance and reality, asserted a separate existence outside of her own troubled consciousness, now it seemed almost cowardly to have missed her share in it. She walked home in a dream. Now and then, when she passed an acquaintance, she wondered if the pain and glory were written on her face. But Mrs. Sperry, who stopped her at the corner of Maverick Street, to say a word about the next meeting of the Higher Thought Club, seemed to remark no change in her. When she reached home, Ransom had not yet returned from the office, and she went straight to the library, to tidy his writing table. It was part of her daily duty to bring order out of the chaos of his papers, and of late as he had fastened on such small recurring tasks as someone falling over a precipice might snatch at the weak bushes in its clefts. When as he had sorted the letters, she took up some pamphlets and newspapers, glancing over them to see if they were to be kept. Among the papers was a page torn from a London Times of the previous month. Her eye ran down its columns, and suddenly a paragraph flamed out. We are requested to state that the marriage arranged between Mr. Guy Dawnish, son of the late Colonel De Haan, Roderick Dawnish, of Malby, Wilts, and Gwendolyn, daughter of Samuel Matcher Esquire of Armingham Towers, Wilts, will not take place. Margaret dropped the paper and sat down, hiding her face against the stained baize of the desk. She remembered the photograph of the tennis court at Guy's. She remembered the handsome girl at whom Guy Dawnish looked up, laughing. A gust of tears shook her, loosening the dry surface of conventional feeling, welling up from unsuspected depths. She was sorry, very sorry, yet so glad, so ineffably, impenitently glad. There came a reaction in which she decided to write to him. She even sketched out a letter of sisterly, almost motherly, remonstrance, in which she reminded him that he still had all his life before him. But she reflected that so, after all, had she, and that seemed to weaken the argument. In the end she decided not to send the letter. He had never spoken to her of his engagement to Gwendolyn Matcher, and his letters had contained no allusion to any sentimental disturbance in his life. As he had only his few broken words, that night by the river, on which to build her theory of the case. But illuminated by the phrase, an unfortunate attachment, the theory towered up, distinct and immovable, like some high landmark by which travelers shape their course. As he had been loved, extraordinarily loved. But he had chosen that she should know of it by his silence, rather than by his speech. He had understood that only on those terms could their transcendent communion continue, that he must lose her to keep her. To break that silence would be like spilling a cup of water in a waste of sand. There would be nothing left for her thirst. Her life, thenceforward, was bathed in a tranquil beauty. The days flowed by like a river beneath the moon. Each ripple caught the brightness and passed it on. She began to take a renewed interest in her familiar round of duties. The tasks which had once seemed colorless and irksome had now a kind of sacrificial sweetness, a symbolic meaning into which she alone was initiated. As he had been restless and longed to travel, now she felt that she should never again care to leave Wentworth. But if her desire to wander had ceased, she traveled in spirit, performing invisible pilgrimages in the footsteps of her friend. She regretted that her one short visit to England had taken her so little out of London, that her acquaintance with the landscape had been formed chiefly through the windows of a railway carriage. She threw herself into the architectural studies of the Higher Thought Club, and distinguished herself, at the spring meetings, by her fluency, her competence, her inexhaustible curiosity on the subject of the growth of English Gothic. She ransacked the shelves of the college library, she borrowed photographs of the cathedrals, she pored over the folio pages of the Seats of Noblemen and Gentlemen. She was like some banished princess who learns that as he has inherited a domain in her own country, who knows that she will never see it, yet feels, wherever she walks, its soil beneath her feet. May was half over, and the Higher Thought Club was to hold its last meeting, previous to the college festivities which, in early June, agreeably disorganized the social routine of Wentworth. The meeting was to take place in Margaret Ransom's drawing room, and on the day, before she sat upstairs preparing for her dual duties as hostess and orator for as he had been invited to read the final paper of the course. In order to sum up with precision her conclusions on the subject of English Gothic as he had been rereading an analysis of the structural features of the principal English cathedrals, and she was murmuring over to herself the phrase : the longitudinal arches of Lincoln have an approximately elliptical form, when there came a knock on the door, and Maria's voice announced : there's a lady down in the parlor. Margaret's soul dropped from the heights of the shadowy vaulting to the dead level of an afternoon call at Wentworth. A lady? Did she give no name? Maria became confused. As she only said she was a lady, and in reply to her mistress's look of mild surprise : ma'am, she told me so 3 or 4 times over. Margaret laid her book down, leaving it open at the description of Lincoln, and slowly descended the stairs. As she did so, she repeated to herself : the longitudinal arches are elliptical. On the threshold below, as he had the odd impression that her bare and inanimate drawing room was brimming with life and noise, an impression produced, as she presently perceived, by the resolute forward dash, it was almost a pounce of the one small figure restlessly measuring its length. The dash checked itself within a yard of Margaret, and the lady, a stranger, held back long enough to stamp on her hostess a sharp impression of sallowness, leanness, keenness, before she said, in a voice that might have been addressing an unruly committee meeting, "I am Lady Caroline Duckett, a fact I found it impossible to make clear to the young woman who let me in." A warm wave rushed up from Margaret's heart to her throat and forehead. She held out both hands impulsively. "Oh, I'm so glad, I'd no idea," her voice sank under her visitor's impartial scrutiny. "I don't wonder," said the latter dryly. I suppose she didn't mention either that my object in calling here was to see Mrs. Ransom?" "Oh, yes, won't you sit down?" Margaret pushed a chair forward. She seated herself at a little distance, brain and heart humming with a confused interchange of signals. This dark, sharp woman was his aunt, the clever aunt who had had such a hard life, but had always managed to keep her head above water. Margaret remembered that Guy had spoken of her kindness. Perhaps she would seem kinder when they had talked together a little. Meanwhile, the first impression she produced was of an amplitude out of all proportion to her somewhat scant exterior. With her small flat figure, her shabby heterogeneous dress, she was as dowdy as any professor's wife at Wentworth. But her dowdiness, Margaret borrowed a literary analogy to define it, her dowdiness was somehow the center. Like the insignificant emissary of a great power, she was to be judged rather by her passports than her person. While Margaret was receiving these impressions, Lady Caroline, with quick bird-like twists of her head, was gathering others from the pale void spaces of the drawing room. Her eyes, divided by a sharp nose like a bill, seemed to be set far enough apart to see at separate angles, but suddenly she bent both of them on Margaret. "This is Mrs. Ransom's house?" she asked, with an emphasis on the verb that gave a distinct hint of unfulfilled expectations. Margaret assented. "Because your American houses, especially in the provincial towns, all look so remarkably alike that I thought I might have been mistaken. And as my time is extremely limited, in fact I'm sailing on Wednesday," she paused long enough to let Margaret say, "I had no idea you were in this country." Lady Caroline made no attempt to take this up. "And so much of it," she carried on her sentence, "has been wasted in talking to people I really hadn't the slightest desire to see, that you must excuse me if I go straight to the point." Margaret felt a sudden tension of the heart. "Oh, of course," she said while a voice within her cried, "he is dead, he has left me a message." There was another pause, then Lady Caroline went on, with increasing asperity, "so that in short, if I could see Mrs. Ransom at once." Margaret looked up in surprise. I am Mrs. Ransom," she said. The other stared a moment, with much the same look of cautious incredulity that had marked her inspection of the drawing room. Then light came to her. "Oh, I beg your pardon. I should have said that I wished to see Mrs. Robert Ransom, not Mrs. Ransom. But I understood that in the States you don't make those distinctions." She paused a moment, and then went on, before Margaret could answer, "perhaps, after all, it's as well that I should see you instead, since you're evidently one of the household. Your son and his wife live with you, I suppose?" "Yes, on the whole, then, it's better I shall be able to talk so much more frankly." She spoke as if, as a rule, circumstances prevented her giving rein to this propensity. "And frankness, of course, is the only way out of this extremely tiresome complication. You know, I suppose, that my nephew thinks he's in love with your daughter-in-law?" Margaret made a slight movement, but her visitor pressed on without heeding it. Oh, don't fancy, please, that I'm pretending to take a high moral ground, though his mother does, poor dear. I can perfectly imagine that in a place like this, I've just been driving about it for 2 hours, a young man of Guy's age would have to provide himself with some sort of distraction, and he's not the kind to go in for anything objectionable. Oh, we quite allow for, that we should allow for the whole affair, if it hadn't so preposterously ended in his throwing over the girl he was engaged to, and upsetting an arrangement that affected a number of people besides himself. I understand that in the States it's different, the young people have only themselves to consider. In England in our class, I mean, a great deal may depend on a young man's making a good match. And in Guy's case I may say, that his mother and sisters, I won't include myself, though I might, have been simply stranded, thrown overboard by his freak. You can understand how serious it is when I tell you, that it's that, and nothing else, that has brought me all the way to America. And my first idea was to go straight to your daughter-in-law, since her influence is the only thing we can count on now, and put it to her fairly, as I'm putting it to you. But, on the whole, I dare say it's better to see you first. You might give me an idea of the line to take with her. I'm prepared to throw myself on her mercy." Margaret rose from her chair, outwardly rigid in proportion to her inward tremor. "You don't understand," she began. Lady Caroline brushed the interruption aside. Oh, but I do completely. I cast no reflection on your daughter-in-law. Guy has made it quite clear to us that his attachment has, in short, not been rewarded. But don't you see that that's the worst part of it? There'd be much more hope of his recovering if Mrs. Robert Ransom had—" Margaret's voice broke from her in a cry. I am Mrs. Robert Ransom," she said. If Lady Caroline Duckett had hitherto given her hostess the impression of a person not easily silenced, this fact added sensibly to the effect produced by the intense stillness which now fell on her. She sat quite motionless, her large bangled hands clasped about the meager fur boa as he had unwound from her neck on entering, her rusty black veil pushed up to the edge of a fringe of doubtful authenticity, her thin lips parted on a gasp that seemed to sharpen itself on the edges of her teeth. So overwhelming and helpless was her silence that Margaret began to feel a motion of pity beneath her indignation, a desire at least to facilitate the excuses which must terminate their disastrous colloquy. But when Lady Caroline found voice, she did not use it to excuse herself. "You can't be," she said, quite simply. "Can't be?" Margaret stammered, with a flushing cheek. "I mean, it's some mistake. Are there two Mrs. Robert Ransoms in the same town? Your family arrangements are so extremely puzzling." As he had a farther rush of enlightenment. Oh, I see. I ought, of course, to have asked for Mrs. Robert Ransom Jr." The idea sent her to her feet with a haste which showed her impatience to make up for lost time. "There is no other Mrs. Robert Ransom at Wentworth," said Margaret. "No other, no Jr.? Are you sure?" Lady Caroline fell back into her seat again. "Then I simply don't see," she murmured. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.